Tonight's meal, tilapia surprise with boiled cabbage. Begin cooking steps 1 through 50 now.
Are you kidding me? Making dinner shouldn't feel like doing a 1,000-piece puzzle. With Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals, the hard part's already done. Pre-chopped ingredients, zero stress. Just assemble, bake, and enjoy. No complicated steps, no mountain of dishes. Try Assemble and Bake today. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
97.1 FM Talk Podcast. This hour of the Mark Reardon Show is sponsored by Gamma Tree Experts. Your trees deserve the best care. Call Gamma Tree Experts. This is the Mark Reardon Show on 97.1 FM Talk.
A little breaking news here this afternoon, although this has been kind of bubbling underneath the surface. And I'm just going to tell you right now, I'm digesting this. I don't know all the implications, but the St. Louis Cardinals and eight other baseball teams that are televised by FanDuel Sports Midwest, well, we have FanDuel Sports Midwest, it's not always Midwest, but the FanDuel Sports Network, have terminated their contracts with FanDuel and Main Street Sports. That's the parent company. So this was reported, I think, a few weeks ago, but Main Street missed a payment to the Cardinals. They owed the Cardinals some money, and apparently they've now missed a payment to some other teams.
Uh-oh.
So The Athletic, who is breaking this story and reporting on it, says the termination of the deals does not preclude those teams. Atlanta, Cincinnati, Detroit, Kansas City, Los Angeles, Miami Marlins, Brewers, Cardinals, Tampa Bay Rays, from returning or renegotiating an agreement. When Main Street was in bankruptcy from 23 to 25, deals were terminated but ultimately reworked. And what Rob Manfred has said is our focus is, particularly given the point in the calendars, to maximize the revenue that's available. They said that they're in a position to take over the broadcast of any team if needed, and the goal is to maximize revenue. So that's kind of a little tricky situation that, again, has been bubbling underneath the surface. I don't think in the end it's going to mean that we can't see St. Louis Cardinals games, but I, for one, was thrilled when they made this whole product available
right
on Prime, because I had to subscribe to Fubo just to see the Cardinals and the Blues. So, but there have been financial problems with Main Street, so
yeah,
that's one of the things they're trying to figure out. Okay, hey, Chris Klemm is back with us this afternoon. He was a Border Patrol agent in the Yuma sector. He's been a great guest on these immigration issues. We wanted him to weigh in on what happened in Minneapolis. First of all, Happy New Year, Chris. How are you?
Hey, Happy New Year. And, man, I'm doing great. You know why? I didn't try to impede an ICE officer from doing their job today. So I'm alive. I'm healthy. I'm doing great.
Well, let's just start with that, because we can talk about the particulars of the action of the ICE officers, but this is a woman who had just dropped off her daughter at school, 6-year-old kid, and decides that her mission is then to park sideways in the middle of a snowy street in Minneapolis and wave through cars that are not ICE agents, but when ICE agents are there, to pull in front of them and to block their vehicles. She thought that that was going to end well. Now, I'm not saying in any way, shape, or form that she deserved to die, but her actions were directly responsible for this tragedy.
100%. And I got to tell you, look, not only was I a chief of the Border Patrol down in Yuma and a deputy chief in various sectors, I was a firearms instructor, a use of force instructor. I have done local and national use of force review boards. I've seen this stuff. I was an assistant chief over training and traumatic incidents. So I have watched and looked at these type of cases for a long, long time. And yeah, she made a decision to put herself in a situation that resulted in deadly force. It was the wrong decision, obviously. No one, and I can tell you this, anybody in my circle that knows me and people that I consider friends, especially former colleagues, none of us ever wanted to have to use deadly force or have to hurt somebody for doing our job. It was part of the job. We understood that. But the idea that there are people out there now that have been weaponized by radical leftists that are trying to disrupt immigration enforcement, and this poor woman felt like she was doing her part, and she was assaulting an agent. Any way you look at it, that she put that agent in harm's way, and he responded. And unfortunately, we have a loss of life. But you know, emotionally, yeah, it sucks to see something like that. But the facts are, she bumped him, and he was under threat. And the courts are going to look at it from his point of view, not some YouTuber's point of view.
Don't you think that one of the key, pieces of evidence here when it comes to the justification of deadly force is the fact that the first bullet went right through the windshield in the front. So because people have made the allegation that he was shooting in the side window, which I think maybe that did happen after the second or third shot, but he clearly was facing right at the car because he fired right through the windshield.
Well, yeah. So the first video and the one that Congress and everybody in Minnesota is flouting is the one with the agent that's trying to get the door open. The shooter was actually in front of the vehicle,
right.
coming to provide backup to his partner. And that's when that's why they were saying, oh, the wheels turn. Look, that gunshot wound or around through the window shows exactly what that agent was doing. He was going after the threat, which was the driver of that vehicle. That's like the weapon. And that's what we're trained to do is we don't shoot tires. That's Hollywood. You shoot the threat, which is the person behind the wheel. She accelerates, she spun, she was going around, and his partner was engaged. This was a problem that shouldn't have happened, but it did. But looking at it, from what I've seen, and I have the same evidence you do, what I've seen and what's been reported. And, you know, it's horrible, it's tragic, but it's the fact of life when you get involved and you assault a law enforcement officer. These are kind of things that happen.
So I've had conflicting information on this today, and I'm just curious about if there's a policy. Does ICE typically, as standard practice, wear body cameras or not?
Well, you know, it depends on the situation. You know, you've got the body camera policy that I was familiar with and I helped write were Customs and Border Protection, which covered Border Patrol agents and the port officers and the air and marine officers. ICE does have certain tactical operations where they will wear that, but I am unclear if they are mandated by their operations policy, because most of the ICE officers we're seeing out there are enforcement removal operations guys. They work in the detention centers and then go out and do fugitive ops, and then the special agents, which aren't typically going to wear body cams. So I just don't have the answer to that. But all those Border Patrol agents that are there, they have their body cameras on, and they should be activated during that. And there'll probably be plenty of video there, because there was, I think, Border Patrol agents on scene as well.
So when I was, I've been dabbling with CNN lately just to see what they're doing and covering this story. I'm driving home last night. I'm listening to the woman who actually shot the video that's been most circulated, right? And you can hear her cussing, "You shot my neighbor,"
yeah.
what the F, all that stuff.
Yeah.
She was making a claim, which I haven't seen anyone else make, that the agents that were on site were not professional, were sloppy, didn't know what they were doing, didn't know procedure. This guy who did the shooting, he'd been an ICE agent for 10 years. Not only that, not that this should matter in this case, but and I saw the video today, he was dragged 300 feet by another migrant who was illegal in a stop 6 months ago and had to get 33 stitches.
Yeah, so you know, her opinion on their professionalism is her opinion. But you know what does matter in this case, and it is his experience. And it's his experience is that when you approach a vehicle in a hostile situation like they were in, and it accelerates, he's been dragged 300 feet. So that is going to weigh heavily on when you look at the totality of the circumstances, whether it's the precedents of Graham versus Connor or Tennessee versus Garner or the latest Felix versus Barnes. It's totality of circumstance
right,
from the
right.
officer's perception. So that does matter. Their professionalism, you know, again, you can only push somebody so far. If they've been hollering at them for an hour or however long they've been out there and they've been dealing with this, yeah, you know what? Occasionally there's going to be a curse word that comes out of an agent's mouth when they're trying to get things going. It just happens. It's life. We're grownups. But, yeah, that's just her opinion. And again, this none of us wanted this to happen. But you didn't have to be Nostradamus to figure out that this was going to happen at some point, because of all the problems we've talked about for the last year.
But it's amazing the different interpretations. You know, I was mentioning CNN, so I'm driving in today, and J.D. Vance had his news conference. I don't know, did you see any of that, Chris? It was really good.
I read some of it.
Yeah.
I was busy on some other things, but I saw some of his comments online.
It was Carolyn was doing a briefing, and then she invited the vice president up, and he, you know, made a strong case. I do think, here's what I've said on the show today and yesterday, I think the administration, DHS, and maybe even the president, they've exaggerated a couple of the points. I don't personally believe that the woman was trying to run the officer over. That's irrelevant when it comes to deadly force, because she was maybe trying to get away, but she certainly could have run him over. But, you know, there's a lot of stuff here, and you have, let me play this because I'm sure you've heard it. The the criticism on CNN is, well, J.D. Vance and Chris, you know, everyone's weighing in on this. Like, we know all the evidence. In the meantime, the other side's doing the same damn thing. They're calling it murder.
This officer not only needs to be fired and suspended, he needs to be charged with murder.
What we saw today was a criminal murder a woman and shoot her in the head.
We have seen them terrorize so many of citizens in the 5th District and across Minnesota. And that has tragically led to this murder that we all watched on TV.
Chris, in our local paper, I don't get the home delivery, the actual paper, but the headline was Federal Officer Kills Motorist. Just a motorist.
Yeah.
Like the Maryland father situation. But how do you respond to the Democrats calling this murder?
Well, you know, again, it's a shame because that's part of the narrative about how bad ICE is and this administration's law enforcement wings are. I find it very irresponsible and downright, you know, hurtful to any chance of closing any division in this country. Because number one, they say that this guy's a murderer. He should be in jail. He should be behind bars. Yet they want full transparency and accountability and investigation. Well, they've come to a foregone conclusion. You know, I also find it interesting that, you know, in one sentence, Governor Walz says, get the feds out of here. We don't need you. But then now is begging to be part of the investigation.
I know.
You can't have your cake and eat it too, Governor Walz.
He wants it both ways.
You created some of this monster. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah. Chris, awesome to have you on. Happy New Year. I want to also personally thank you so much. I know you invited me to take that trip to the border a couple of months ago.
Yeah.
I just couldn't get it together quick enough, but I really appreciate it. Maybe later this year we can, you know, hook up again. But thanks for the offer. I really do appreciate it.
You got it. Thanks for having me on and look forward to the next time.
All right, take care. Thank you. That's Chris Klemm. And I want to play a little bit of this J.D. Vance audio. I played it earlier in the show. He goes up there after Carolyn starts the briefing, immediately rips on CNN.
Somebody sent me a photo of a CNN headline about what happened in Minneapolis. And this is the headline. I'm just going to read it. Outrage after ICE officer kills U.S. citizen in Minneapolis. Well, that's one way to put it. And that is the way that many people in the corporate media have put this attack over the last 24 hours. And I say attack very, very intentionally, because this was an attack on federal law enforcement. This was an attack on law and order. This was an attack on the American people. The way that the media, by and large, has reported this story has been an absolute disgrace, and it puts our law enforcement officers at risk every single day.
Now, he pointed out what CNN left out. Same thing with the Post-Dispatch.
What that headline leaves out is the fact that that very ICE officer nearly had his life ended, dragged by a car 6 months ago, 33 stitches in his leg. So you think maybe he's a little bit sensitive about somebody ramming him with an automobile? What that headline leaves out is that that woman was there to interfere with a legitimate law enforcement operation in the United States of America. What that headline leaves out is that that woman is part of a broader left-wing network to attack, to dox, to assault, and to make it impossible for our ICE officers to do their job. If the media wants to tell the truth, they ought to tell the truth that a group of left-wing radicals have been working tirelessly, sometimes using domestic terror techniques, to try to make it impossible for the President of the United States to do what the American people elected him to do, which is enforce our immigration laws.
I've been many times on the record, I've said I'm not a fan, Chris and I have talked about this before, of the ICE agents always being masked up. But on the other hand, you know what happened today earlier? There was somebody that went out there, one of these websites, that said that they identified the officer, and then a picture gets out there, and I don't know if that particular person was harassed, but it wasn't the guy. It wasn't an accurate picture of the officer that was involved. But if they find out who this is, I guarantee you, I mean, the guy's going to basically have to go into witness protection. So more ripping of the media here.
The president stands with ICE. I stand with ICE. We stand with all of our law enforcement officers. And part of that is recognizing that you people in the media, not everybody in this room, but many people in this room have been lying about this attack. She was trying to ram this guy with her car. He shot back. He defended himself. He's already been seriously wounded in law enforcement operations before. And everybody who's been repeating the lie that this is some innocent woman who was out for a drive in Minneapolis when a law enforcement officer shot at her, you should be ashamed of yourselves. Every single one of you.
Now, you know, the press had their say also. They asked some questions. One of them, did she deserve to die?
Everything that you say is true. How does being part of that network justify being shot?
Let me set this up just a little bit, because what they're saying is that she's part of sort of an organized network, and I think there's an indication of that that goes out and protests ICE. And look, you know, the one thing, I just remembered this, Sue. I heard this from the woman who shot the video last night, and I didn't remember it until just now. She talked about how the first thing she heard yesterday were whistles. You know what the whistles are?
No.
That's the neighbors. They use whistles to indicate that ICE is in the neighborhood. So they have this whole deal where they,
oh
yeah.
Oh, my gosh.
Isn't that kind of interesting?
Yes, it is.
So that, and that's only been, I've never even heard that reported by any outlet, but I heard the woman who did the interview last night with Aaron Burnett say that, because Aaron was saying, well, tell us the story from the beginning. Well, I heard the whistles, and the whistles indicate that ICE is in the neighborhood. Well, it has to be, unless I'm missing something, and that ICE blows whistles when they're in the neighborhood, that sounds like they have a little system, right? Right?
Yeah.
Little alert system. So then what I'd like to see is I'd like to see a little bit more video of what happened immediately before the SUV pulls in front of her, because
yeah.
you can see her, and this is misrepresented in the New York Times. The New York Times tries to make it seem like she was waving the ICE vehicle through. Oh, no, 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 no. If you watched the video before that, and there are a few seconds that I've seen, she's waving through another vehicle to go past her. Then she moves forward to specifically block the ICE vehicle. She is completely sideways in the street. She's not trying to head in the right or the left. She's not. She's actually sideways. And then when the officer comes around, that's when she starts turning the vehicle. She puts it in reverse. Then she puts it in drive. And that's what he fires. So, I mean, some of this, and I've said this in fairness, I think that some of this has been overstated a little bit on the part of the administration. Everyone needs to dial down some of this stuff, but good Lord, let's get the basic fact.
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
That's right. All right, Reading Roundtable tomorrow, 3 o'clock. Special announcement at the beginning of the roundtable that might even be made by the Attorney General of Missouri, Catherine Hanaway, so stay tuned for that. We'll have Paul Hall on entertainment. The Golden Globes are this weekend. The Critics' Choice Awards were last weekend. He'll have some entertainment recommendations. We might talk about this tomorrow, but I wanted to bring it up because last night I kind of got sucked into it, and it's not that long, and I think I'll probably finish it tonight. But you guys probably remember, and the audience might remember if you're a certain age, Susan Smith, who murdered her two kids, drove them into you know, a pond, as I remember it. And I've said this before, and I want people to understand the nuance here, is that when I was reporting on that story when it happened 31 years ago, I had a mindset about postpartum depression overall, like, well, that's a bunch of hooey. I can't understand this at all, right? Well, it's real. And I'm not letting Susan Smith off the hook for murdering her two kids. But there was another case that you might remember, and that's the case of Andrea Yates. And this one is even more horrific because she drowned her five kids in the family's bathtub. Mm. And there is now a three-part investigation on HBO Max that started, I think it just started on Tuesday, and it's I've got like a half an hour left of this. But here is something that's fascinating. So Rusty Yates, the former husband, is prominently featured here. Now, I don't know if I remember any of this from the beginning, but what happened is Rusty Yates, and they feature another guy in here also that had the same experience, totally different circumstance. On a college campus in the 80s, this was probably about the same time a lot of us were going to college, they run across this guy named Michael Warnke on a college campus. And it's an interesting situation. The guy is a big athlete in Michigan. He goes to Central Michigan. They think he might be able to go to the NFL because he's that good, but he gets injured. So he starts doing this evangelism stuff, right? And he draws people into what I've decided, based on this documentary, now again, documentaries can sway things, is a cult. But it's not a cult in the traditional way that we think of a cult. In other words, there's not a bunch of people singing Kumbaya and drinking Kool-Aid and all this other stuff. They're not in a particular compound like Waco or something like that. But what Michael Warnke does over the course of more than 10 years, and maybe up to 15 years, is he writes letters. Remember when we used to write letters?
Oh, yeah.
So he would write letters and send cassette tapes that were talking about how evil people were and the devil and Satan and how you have to come to terms with Jesus. And it was intense. And he was one of those guys, and Fred Phelps comes to mind, that evil SOB who used to go out and say God hates faggots, and he would, you know, always protest at funerals, which was horrific. Oh. I've said this before. There's two people in my life I've looked into their eyes and have seen pure evil. One was Jeffrey Tokar, a guy that killed a guy named Johnny Miller in Mexico, Missouri, in front of his two kids with a shotgun. Gosh. Horrible. And I went to that trial, and Jeffrey Tokar, piece of human debris. He was removed from the planet thanks to a needle in the 1990s. But the other guy was Fred Phelps. I mean, pure evil. But this Michael Warnke guy was like that, and he would be on college campuses or elsewhere with his megaphone, right, and his sign, and he would have his kids out there. And, or not his kids, but some people, I'm sorry, some of his followers' kids shouting, you're going to hell, Jesus doesn't love, all this stuff. So over the course of time, Andrea Yates, who's pretty normal, good mother, as portrayed in this film by many people who knew her, right? She had postpartum issues 2 years before this happened. They got her help. They got her out of it. Now, Rusty tells the story and says, the doctors told us not to have another baby, all right? They had four sons. He decided they rolled the dice because they were worried about the postpartum. They said, look, if you have another child, there's a 50-50 shot. She lands in the same spot. Well, they want to have as many kids as they can, so they have another girl named Mary. And in the aftermath, Andrea Yates slips into this psychosis. I mean, it's not depression. It's psychosis. And I'm not done with the film yet, but there is no doubt in my mind that this Michael Warnke guy was a cult leader who, and you get other evidence in this because it's not just Andrea Yates. What happens is you find out, or people find out after this gets news exposure, that they're not the only ones, that they've been corresponding with Michael Warnke.
Oh.
There's a guy that's featured in the documentary who's one of the key storytellers. And it's interesting because at first you hear him sharing his stories and he's complimentary. He's like, this guy, I was, you know, just absolutely taken by his story. I felt that I was failing myself. I bought in. I wrote him a letter. He goes, it was the worst decision I ever made in my life. And then the story kind of unfolds from there. So, I mean, I'm not through with the documentary. I don't even know if Andrea Yates is still alive. I know her husband decided to participate, or now it's the ex-husband. And one of the things that's awkward, and he admits it, that people don't like this, but he says he still loves her. And he is very empathetic to a woman who killed five children.
Gosh.
That's awkward. And it's weird. And I think most people would say, how in the world can you do that? Because that's a normal reaction. But if you see this movie and you see the level of manipulation that this guy was putting on her, and if you combine it with the postpartum, she was brainwashed.
Yeah.
And they present cases of a lot of other people who were brainwashed by this guy.
Jeez.
Just via letters and cassette tapes. It shows you. Now, look, I offer this as an example because I think this is put in modern times a little bit. This is how these people become so radicalized so quickly.
I see what you mean.
They get drawn in, they get sucked in, they like the message at first, and then it becomes very dangerous. Anyway, that is on HBO Max. If you want to watch it, it's pretty compelling.
What's it
for
called?
Sure. Let me pull up the exact title because it's got a longer title. I knew you were going to ask me that,
I'm
Fred.
Sorry.
I already closed my iPad.
Well,
so
it's a good question, though, Fred.
Andrea,
no, it's a very good question.
Yeah.
It is called The Cult Behind the Killer, The Andrea Yates Story. Three parts on HBO Max. It's not the best documentary you're ever going to see, but it's pretty compelling, and I'm going to...
You know how everything's a subscription now? Music, movies, even socks. I swear if I...
To continue this ad, please upgrade to Premium Plus Platinum.
What? No, anyway, Blue Apron...
This is a pay-per-listen ad. Please confirm your billing.
Oh, that's annoying. At least with the new Blue Apron, there's no subscription needed. Get delicious meals delivered without the weekly plan.
Wait, no subscription?
Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Steve's Pet Store, it's gone. Foxes, gone. El Patron, gone. Everything in this neighborhood. Altadena is not existing right now.
I know more people in the Palisades, I've lived here my whole life, that have lost their homes than that still have their homes.
Most of the other areas you drive through, it's kind of a shock if you do see a structure intact.
I mean, this was horrific, and they're still trying to rebuild. Here's what the governor of California, Mayor Bass, have to say 1 year later.
Costliest wildfire event in American history. Where are we at in the recovery effort?
We've made
tremendous progress, the fastest debris removal in American history, at least modern American history, in 6 months.
People are still out of their homes. Mm. It doesn't make anybody feel wonderful for me to sit here and tell you that this is one of the fastest recovery and rebuilding efforts that the state of California has ever seen. And I'm proud of that.
Brian Ping is with us. He's a St. Louis native and an anchor and reporter for KNX Radio in Los Angeles. And he was our chief correspondent a year ago. I can't believe it's been a year already, but you were so awesome describing all this. I was, as you might remember, just completely captivated by what was going on because the visuals were so stunning. But Brian, Happy New Year. How are you?
Yeah, Happy New Year to you, Mark. I'm doing well, thank you. And yeah, hard to believe a whole year has passed since that horrific time.
Is what Gavin Newsom said there true, that it was, you know, basically the biggest debris removal process in American history? Is there a fair amount of truth to that or not?
Yeah, there's not much evidence to refute that, but I mean, that only tells part of the story here, because yeah, you get rid of the toxic ash, you get rid of the debris, okay, but then there's the entire process of rebuilding all those gaps, and all those gaps are still standing, and there's a permitting issue here. And we lost about 13,000 homes total from these fires, and they've only issued permits to rebuild for about one-fifth of those properties. So the process of doing that, you can say what you will about the cleanup, but getting back to any sense of normalcy is very slow going. You know, this could be a scar that lasts for years and years.
So I saw a story in the LA Times this week that said that there are a lot of outside investors that are moving in and dominating the market, trying to buy some of this property and maybe, you know, some of the existing buildings. Do you know anything about that?
Yeah, I did a report on this yesterday, actually, talking about these are mostly mid-sized investors, speculative LLCs that are coming up and scooping up some of these properties. And I understand as many as 40 to 45% of these distressed properties that are being sold are going to these types of investors. We're not talking about, you know, the likes of BlackRock, the big Wall Street firms that the president is targeting, but it's more of the, and we're not talking about mom and pop either, that are, you know, one investment property. It's kind of somewhere in the middle. So those are the institutions that are coming and buying these homes, because for a lot of these folks, they just want to be done with it. They're going through so much stress right now. They don't really have the know-how to navigate, in some cases, this sort of market, especially under these extreme circumstances. So they just want to be done. In many cases, they're being lowballed, and they just feel they have no choice but to take that offer.
Unbelievable. The other narrative that I've seen sort of emerge in the past week, just curious about your opinion on this, is, you know, I think a lot of the focus was on the Palisades, and maybe that's a better-known area, but my understanding is the folks in Altadena have had really challenges, and they kind of feel like they're forgotten.
Yeah, it's really sad, because in the Palisades, a lot, not everybody, but a lot of people, they have the means to fight City Hall, fight the insurance companies, because in many cases, the payouts aren't matching the, you know, what it costs to build a home nowadays. But Altadena, you just don't have that. You don't have the wealth that you do in the Palisades. Yeah. And so in a way, it's kind of a gentrification by fire, in a way, because you never know. We could see whole-scale permanent change to who lives there. Sad story there for sure. It's just a lot more difficult when, you know, you're up against those odds. And, you know, for a lot of these folks who had been in those homes for decades, sadly, they won't be coming back.
So the LA Times reported on this last week, Brian Ping. Brian Ping's with us, St. Louis native, KNX Radio in Los Angeles. They found some text messages that indicated that firefighters who put out what is called the Lockman Fire were ordered to leave before the fire was completely out. They say they knew it was a bad idea. They knew the Palisades Fire, which sprung back a week later, was a rekindle. So they basically say in this story that firefighters mopping up a small brush fire that authorities say reignited as the Palisades Fire 5 days later were ordered to leave the original burn scene, even though they complained the ground was still smoldering and rocks remained hot to the touch, according to firefighter text messages reviewed by the Times. To their surprise, the battalion chief ordered them to roll up their hoses and pull out of the area on January 2nd, the day after the 8-acre blaze was declared contained, rather than stay and make sure there were no hidden embers that could spark a new fire. That is rather stunning, isn't it?
Yeah, this is a big controversy. There was a rally among angry residents in the Palisades yesterday about this, including Spencer Pratt, the reality star who announced he's running for mayor. He's been kind of front and center as far as a public face rallying against this. And yeah, it's something that demands an investigation, a further look at. And we've had the after-action report by the fire department, but heavily edited. A lot of stuff may have been omitted, left out of that, as far as people seeking answers as to why they decided to just let that go. And it's a real mystery, and it's a big point of contention right now.
So, you know, I for nights and nights would watch some of the Fox coverage. They have their Fox News channel outside of the main Fox that picked up some of the California, you know, anchors and some of the reporting. And I was really, really captivated by this. But it was such a dry season, and it was just a powder keg because of that. But you guys have had, like, exactly the opposite the last 2 months. Nonstop. When I saw them cleaning off the rain from the Rose Bowl last week, I'd never seen that much rain in Pasadena or Los Angeles in my life.
At this time of the fire season, well, I should say the rain year. The rain year begins October 1st, like the fiscal year for rain. It runs from October 1st to September 30th. Since October 1st, last year when the fires hit, we had received 16 hundredths of an inch of rain.
Oh,
less than 2/10 of an inch, that's
wow.
It, in Los Angeles. So conditions are ripe. You have extremely dry ground where we hadn't gotten any measurable rainfall since the previous May, combined with these winds that got hellishly strong at the worst point. Reports that they got up to about 100 miles an hour. So if you take something like, oh, say, the Lachlan Fire or live lines that might have been down, recipe for disaster. Of course, as you mentioned, this year, completely different story. We've gotten, I believe, one of the rainiest starts to a rain year that we've ever had. It's just a night and day difference. It really is something.
Yeah, it's crazy, but that's what happens in the Los Angeles area. Are you geared up for two playoff teams playing there at SoFi in the next few weeks with the Chargers and the Rams, although they don't all play at home, obviously, but you got both teams in the playoffs, Brian Ping.
Yeah, it seems like, well, right now it seems like we got to see how things go with the Chargers because that's a beat-up team. And Justin Herbert, one of the best quarterbacks in the league, has no protection to speak of. And that's a team that looks to be trending down. They might be a bit exhausted. Maybe they turn it on against the Patriots team that's a bit untested. Drake May is great, but we'll have to see how he handles the pressure of the playoffs. And, you know, the Rams are on a roll right now. And, you know, they get set for their first playoff game against Carolina. That's a very winnable game. That's a team that could go on a run.
I like the matchups. I'm not very happy that, you know, the Chiefs aren't in. I'm a big Packers fan. I'm a little worried about the Bears. I can't even believe I'm saying that. But I like the matchups for this weekend. I like the fact that we have football on tonight as well, Brian Ping. I hope all is well. Did you make it home for the holidays? I think you did, right?
I did. A brief trip. In between my work days. I got to spend several days with the family. It was really nice.
Well, I was going to try to reach out.
I like the warm weather that we had there for a minute.
Oh, yeah.
We actually went to the zoo that one day, me and all the kids, that Sunday where it dropped down to, 25 that night. So we got it while we could.
Yeah, but since then, we've had so many days, like the last couple of days. Today was a little gloomy and rainy, but we had, you know, maybe upper 60s. Tuesday was like upper 60s, wasn't it, Sue? Yeah, it was really
Midwestern
nice.
Midwestern winter, man. What can I say?
Yeah, I love climate change. That's what I'll say. Brian Ping, awesome. Happy New Year. Thank you, sir. Oh, I got a quick text from Brian Ping. He forgot to say something very important, Sue, and I think you'll appreciate this. We have to share this here this afternoon. A happy birthday to his niece, Lola Jean Ping, in Kirkwood.
Aww.
Daughter of Russell Ping of Russell's Cafe, 10 years old.
Yay!
Today. Happy birthday.
That's so nice.
I have a 10-year-old as well who's about to be 11. We have an audio cut of the day coming up here. I do want to mention we have a Reardon Roundtable tomorrow. We have an announcement to make at the beginning of the roundtable, and that announcement is actually going to be made by Attorney General Catherine Hanaway. We are unclear whether or not it involves any active indictments or grand jury subpoenas for the panel or for the host or for Fred. I mean, you know, people trust Fred, but you just never know with a guy like that, right?
How about old Fred Bottenheimer over there, ladies and gentlemen?
Anyway, there is something significant that we're going to share at 3 tomorrow, and
You
can tune in. Jane's going to be on the panel, Greg Keller, and also State Rep Steve Butt. So there's information that continues to kind of come out here about Renee Nicole Good. That is the mom who was killed by the ICE agent after veering her car toward him. Now, in the New York Post today, they're describing her this afternoon as an anti-ICE warrior and part of a group of activists who worked to document and resist the federal immigration crackdown in Minnesota. So Good, who moved to Minnesota last year, linked up with the anti-ICE activists. Remember I mentioned how she's got a 6-year-old kid?
Yeah.
It's a son, not a daughter. I made a mistake on that. But listen to this. She linked up with the anti-ICE activists through her 6-year-old son's woke charter school, which boasts that it puts, quote, social justice first and prioritizes quote, involving kids in political and social activism. Well, there you go. So a mother named Lisa, who goes to the same school, her daughter does, say she was a warrior. She died doing what was right. And I even mentioned when I heard the interview on CNN last night with the woman who filmed all this, the video that's most circulated, where you can hear her screaming, what the F, what the F. She even said that the way that she was alerted to the fact that ICE was in the neighborhood is because whistles went off. I listened to that last night. I'm like, what? So they have this little signal situation where if ICE is nearby, they start blowing whistles. And that's to alert everyone. And that's how the mother, the innocent mother, pulls up and tries to block ICE, because that's what they do. So she did have an ex-husband, I believe, but she also has a wife. She had a wife, Rebecca. They were raising the boy together in what the Post says was a mostly working-class, activist-heavy neighborhood of South Minneapolis. One thing I didn't know, and it was made clear yesterday, I can't remember which guest pointed this out, Sue, but this is literally like two blocks away from all the George Floyd stuff, right?
Oh, wow.
So if you look at this street in particular, you've got all these homes with windows decked out with Alphabet Mafia flags or signs depicting George Floyd, right? So this school is called the Southside Family Charter School. It's a K-5 academy, opened in 1972. And since its inception, they have been unabashedly dedicated to social justice education, according to the co-founders. So it's through the involvement with the six-year-old kid that she becomes an ICE watch individual, disrupting ICE raids in Minneapolis. And here's a gym teacher from the school that resigned last month. Says, from my understanding, she was involved in social justice. We're kind of a tight-knit community. A lot of the parents are activists. He said that current event topics like the killing of George Floyd were regular parts of the curriculum at the school. Last month, students took a field trip where they learned about Aboriginal issues, a reference to the indigenous people of faraway Australia. So, you know, more and more coming out about her. I don't know what that's going to mean in the end, but the whole thing is just a complete and utter disaster right
yeah,
now.
Yeah, that's pretty well put.
And did you know this? Here's something else that's just ridiculous. Do you know how many kids in Minneapolis and the Minneapolis public schools went to school today and will go to school tomorrow?
None?
Zero.
Oh, come on.
They called school off, even though this is one neighborhood in Minneapolis.
What?
These kids are coming off 2 weeks of school. No school, right?
Yeah.
They're coming off a pandemic where learning loss is significant. And they decide up in Minneapolis, let's give them a couple more days off because—
Why?
You know,
I mean, what is the official
people
line?
Light fires and— Who knows? I don't know. I have no idea because I don't know, Sue. I
don't even
begin.
Know. What,
yeah. It's ridiculous. It is ridiculous. So they won't, you know, they won't give you off school up there because they're used to handling the snow. But an activist blocks a federal law enforcement officer and gets shot, and that gets you off school. Wow. I can't. That's been underreported today, I will tell you that.
Stand by. Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
Well, let me kind of do a little bit of a round robin here on some of this and the shooting in Minneapolis, kind of wrap it up. Here's Paul Morrow, who was all over this.
They've been doing this operation all day. They've been repeatedly harassed and impeded, all of which is a federal crime. Apparently, reportedly, this victim here was very much part of that, if not a leader in it. You see the video, a couple things are undeniable. Number one, they're trying to leave this scene. They want ICE out. Well, here's ICE trying to leave this scene, and you're impeding them. So you have near riot conditions, and you're being boxed in. That's a very, very sort of nerve-wracking circumstance. Anybody who's ever been in the middle of that. They get out of the car. They approach her. Understand what they say to her. Get out of the car. She's under arrest. They're about to arrest her. That's why the officer who shoots has his gun out, all right? The people say, why does he have his gun out? Because they were about to take her into custody, and the whole day had gone violently.
So we heard a little bit more from Tim Walz today. You know, Kristi Noem, her news conference yesterday, she pointed out that they know each other pretty well because they served in Congress together, and they became governor at the same time for the most part as well. So she was somewhat respectful of Tim Walz yesterday. Did he return the favor?
They have determined the character of a 37-year-old mom that they didn't even know, don't know. They've determined that the actions are done. I don't know. I've not used inflammatory terms of what happened. I've asked us to find the answers. The only way we find the answers is a thorough investigation by nonpartisan professionals.
Oh, okay, that would have been fine if that's what he said yesterday, but that's not what he said yesterday.
All.
And that's not what Jacob Fry said yesterday. And this one just makes me laugh because most of the country doesn't realize how full of crap he is.
We've delivered that. We've been able to do it. We've earned the trust. Everyone knows globally, certainly here, that George Floyd, who was murdered a few blocks from this site, tore at the soul of who we were. But we healed. We built back trust. Chief Brian O'Hara came in and took one of the most difficult jobs in America of building back trust in the police force in Minneapolis after Derek Chauvin murdered George Floyd.
Let me tell you something. Derek Chauvin did not murder George Floyd. And I need you, if you're even one, you know, like little percentage point or a 0.1% doubtful of that, watch The Fall of Minneapolis. Google it. You can watch it for free. Just watch the first 15 or 20 minutes. And then you tell me if you heard the whole story and you still have Tim Walz spreading a bunch of BS about Derek Chauvin and George Floyd. George Floyd was a common thug criminal who was in that convenience store already saying, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. He did the same thing in a previous traffic stop that is available via body cam that I'm sure you can find online, where he started saying when the cop pulled him over, I can't breathe, I can't breathe. So Derek Chauvin will probably spend the rest of his life in prison, but talk about a situation of injustice. And I don't get it, and we'll talk about this maybe tomorrow, but man, you Democrats, you love criminals. You just love them. You take the side, they take the side of criminals every single situation. Someone, maybe Steve Butts can explain that to me tomorrow. Someone on the left is going to have to explain why you make heroes out of bad guys and criminals. The Maryland father, Mike Brown, George Floyd. Now, Tim Walz is right. We don't know much about this woman, right? But you know what else? You don't know what that officer has gone through and the position that he was in. And you're calling it a murder at this point? And trying to inflame and gaslight the situation even more, which is, by the way, you do it with the help of the media up there and the media across the country. It's reckless and irresponsible. I'm glad that nobody else got hurt last night. I hope that continues.
Get more at 971talk.com.